Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, our correspondent speaks with us from Cuba during President Obama's historic visit. Iran's supreme leader lashes out at the United States. New studies find your dog may very well understand what you're feeling.
Dogs and humans may have more in common than they think, and that's not a big surprise considering that canines were domesticated a long time ago.
And a possible country music love triangle has tongues wagging. It's right here on the Voice of America. U.S. President Barack Obama continues his historic visit to Cuba today with high-level talks with Cuban officials. Correspondent Mary Alice Salinas is there and joins us on the line. Welcome to our program.
Well, thank you very much, Susan. It's good to join you. It's very exciting in Havana right now, I have got to tell you.
I was going to ask you about the feeling there.
It's hard to describe, but there's really a real sense of the history of the moment. And what surprised me, because I did write in with on Air Force One with the president, was with the motorcade all day, was how many people cheer and chant his name and applaud, and we're standing at him by when a man shouted, "Obama's the greatest man in the world." But I guess it's really just amazing the welcome that that the Cuban people themselves have given him. I think there's a lot of hope that this is going to help lift up their situation. Obviously, there are a lot of people who are in poverty and things are difficult here, and this they hope might open things up.
However, we're seeing all these smiles and everything. There are some real differences between the two governments. In general terms, could you go over those for us?
Well, I have to tell you, and that's another very interesting thing. There are a lot of contradictory feelings. Yes, there are differences. You could even see it between Security Service and U.S. Security Service. I mean, there's still a sense of separation, distress, suspicion. It's been decades of really Cold War enemies, and now they're really trying to find their way. The differences on the Cuban side, one thing high on the agenda is lifting the 55-year embargo, and that's something President Obama himself cannot do without Congress, and if it happens through Congress, it has to happen with bipartisan support. So some Republicans are buying that this is a good idea. You know, you shift it from a policy of isolation to one of engagement, and not everyone is convinced yet. So a large delegation of lawmakers here include Republicans, and I think analysts say that the Republicans or those who oppose this new policy have to see that it's working, that this commercial ties, that these people ties, that these travel is something that is going to develop.
As a member of the news media, do you feel any constraints from the Cuban government on what you're covering?
Listen, I was part of the tight White House pool yesterday. I was very protected. But I have been in discussions with other journalists who feel that they're being watched and the government follows up with people that they've spoken with. I, for instance, just try to log on to our VOA website, and that's blocked. I can't get into our own website. And they allow Wi-Fi access just in that little spot here where the press is. So, yeah, I'm constricted. You definitely know this is a constricted place, and you get a sense of that, what this must have been like more than 50 years. Very difficult.
Okay, well, thank you very much for speaking with us from Cuba. Time for a look at what's going on the web today concerning this story. And our social media reporter, Andrew Palchevsky, has joined me here at the Anchor Desk. And Andrew, what are you finding out?
Lots of coverage on this. Hashtag Obama in Cuba, hashtag Obama in Havana, and also hashtag Obama in Cuba, EN, so in Spanish as well. So you're getting in English and Spanish a lot of reaction. As Mary Alice was just saying, being part of the White House press pool, there's sometimes limited areas that you can go in and kind of restricted. But what we're seeing with social media is that those restrictions are by and large kind of being broken down. We see a lot of pictures that we wouldn't necessarily otherwise see. We're seeing a lot of coverage and opinions that we wouldn't otherwise see through social media. And part of that is because in Cuba, people are able to use Twitter. It's actually through their mobile phones. What they do is they tweet out as though you're sending a text message, and it kind of goes out into the ether. There's no way for people to reply to you or you to interact with people, but the messages at least can be sent out. So we're seeing a lot of these opinions coming through. And the idea is that once Twitter comes to Cuba and has the full access, the full site, whether it's via smartphone or computer, all these people are already set up. They already have accounts. They already know how to use it. But even now, even prior to that happening, we're seeing some of these opinions come out on social media. So it's a very valuable tool.
And the Cuban government, they do like to keep their finger on what's going on. How can they control this, or is it impossible to stop these people from sending out their tweets?
Well, I spoke last week with the director of digital media for TV Marti, which is one of the Broadcasting Board of Governors entities broadcasting to Cuba, and he said that it's kind of out of the bag now, that with tourism ramping up, it's going to be difficult for the government to shut down any of these social media or any of the internet networks, because tourists are going to go and take selfies on the beach and post to Facebook. So as the country is advancing and as the walls are coming down, he thinks that the internet is going to only grow.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
And we have a very special birthday today.
Yes, we do. It is the 10th birthday of Twitter, 10 years old today. So
they tweeted me.
Did they?
They did. They sent me a birthday tweet.
Oh, nice. Yeah, they're sending out messages to a lot of the followers around the world, which is really nice. And hashtag love Twitter, because they wrote this really nice note and signed it love Twitter. So when you tweet that out using hashtag love Twitter, you get a little heart emoji and a little Twitter icon next to that hashtag. So it's a nice little way to commemorate their birthday.
Speaking of the Cuba story and tweets, I got an interesting tweet today from somebody, I presume, who follows Cuba. It was in Spanish. I had to have it translated. And basically said that all these happy people you're seeing in the streets, some of them are getting paid to be there by the government and support Obama. Now, I have no idea if that's actually true or not, but this is what his particular tweet was saying to me.
Just the fact that someone's able to raise that on social media shows the power, that there might be something that we wouldn't know otherwise that might be covered up by the government, but that we have kind of whistleblowers and watchdogs that can take to social media and use that as kind of a megaphone to get these messages out. I think that speaks volumes.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Andrew.
Thank you.
Okay, this is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
A group of astronomers probing a young star cluster just found a bunch of huge monster stars. The star cluster is called R136 and is located about 157,000 light years from Earth. The group used images gathered by the Hubble Space Telescope to detect dozens of stars with at least 50 times the mass of the Sun and about nine others with more than 100 times the solar mass. The nine most massive of these stars were found to be not only incredibly enormous, but together they produce an extremely bright light that is 30 million times more luminous than the Sun. One of the astronomers said that while some suggest the monster stars were created by the constant merger of smaller binary stars, this doesn't seem to be the case with the supermassive stars in the R136 cluster. Instead, it appears that the road that led to the huge size of these stars may have begun with its formation process. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, used the Persian New Year Sunday to take aim at the United States for what he perceived as continued animosity toward Iran. Speaking Sunday during a rally in the northern city of Mashhad, the Iranian leader said big foreign companies, especially in the financial sector, are reluctant to do business with Tehran. The Iranian spiritual leader said the Americans keep sanctions in place in a way that big companies, corporations, and banks would not dare to come near the Islamic Republic. He described that as sheer animosity. The Ayatollah also said the U.S. had no business trying to stop Iran from developing its defensive capabilities, including missiles. The remarks were delivered as Iran's president, Hassan Rouhani, said further engagement with the international community is the key to growth. Mr. Rouhani's allies won seats in last month's elections and could use this new leverage to gain further economic reforms. Iran analyst Shakram Akbarzadeh of Australia's Deakin University told VOA's Victor Beatty There are two underlying reasons why the spiritual leader's strident tone.
The supreme leader has to make sure that he maintains and protects Iran's revolutionary image. Iran has been anti-American from day one, and that's very much ingrained in the identity of the Iranian state. So what he is saying is that he wants to make sure that no one can accuse Iran of compromising its revolutionary anti-American identity and position. So that's the number one. So he is speaking to a large domestic audience in that regard, and probably also external audience, but primarily it's a domestic audience and it's the hardliners within Iran who have been critical of the nuclear deal. So he wants to assure them that Iran is going to continue its revolutionary anti-American, anti-Israel agenda. Secondly, I think he is referring to some of the sanctions that Iran is threatened with, especially with the ballistic program, Iran's missile program. And there are other sanctions imposed on Iran that weren't even related to the missile program or the nuclear program. You know, following the revolution, a lot of Iranian assets were frozen in the United States, and Iran has been accused of working with terrorists, so it's a sponsor of terrorists globally. And that has had implications. So there are a series of sanctions imposed on Iran, and that creates some challenges and hurdles for international banking. So I think he is mixing all of them together.
We've heard so many stories and seen so many reports about European countries, other foreign companies rushing to Iran to make deals. But are there some that are holding back?
I think by and large, trading with Iran has opened up, and a lot of companies are happy to trade, purchase Iranian goods, and send their own goods to sell in Iran. So import and export is benefiting, but investment in Iran, especially in the financial sector, is a lot more complicated, not only because there are question marks about whether sanctions will snap back, but also because the Iranian legal system isn't equipped to allow for direct foreign investment. So there is a lack of clarity in the regulations in Iran, and that is hampering foreign investment.
Shahram Abarzadeh says he does not believe the international community, including veto-wielding Russia and China, will punish Iran over its missile tests with new UN sanctions, in part because the country, struggling with high unemployment, has yet to benefit fully from sanctions relief from the nuclear deal. Coming up on International Edition, your dog might have a sympathetic ear, and a new song for Gwen Stefani. Do you sometimes get the feeling that your dog knows what you're feeling, thinking? Well, two studies purportedly show that man's best friend really does understand you and can tell if you're happy or sad. VOA's Deborah Block has been investigating all this and joins us on the line. Hi, Deborah.
Hi, Susan.
What's this all about?
Well, these are new studies. People have been wondering for a long time, can my dog recognize or understand my emotions? So the first study at the University of Mexico, is where researchers trained seven domestic dogs to remain still in an MRI scanner. You know, that's that scanner that can produce detailed images inside the body. Now, each dog was shown 50 photos of different people and 50 images of inanimate objects to see how their brains reacted. Well, the researchers found that the brain activity greatly increased when the canine saw human faces. So this indicates, the study said, that dogs recognize human emotions through facial cues. Now, another project, this one was led by a team in Brazil and in England, a co-project, that also showed that dogs identify people's emotions by their faces. In this study, 17 domestic dogs were shown a pair of photos of someone looking happy or sad, along with the person's voice speaking in, you know, a happy or angry tone. And the canines were spoken to in a language that they did not understand, so that they would have to recognize the tone rather than the word. So what happened there is the researchers discovered that the dog spent more time looking at the facial expression that matched the tone of the voice, and they pretty much, you know, ignored the inanimate objects. So when the dogs were hearing positive sounds, they would look longer to positive faces, and when they were listening to negative sounds, they would look longer at the negative and angry faces.
So what were their conclusions to all this?
Now, in the last study, it means that dogs are able to integrate two sources of sensory information to perceive emotion in people in general and not just their owners. And, of course, the first one indicates that the brain waves of the dogs change when they see the humans. So next, the research team in England and Brazil, they would like to conduct more experiments to learn how dogs actually react to these different human emotions. We know they recognize them, but what does it mean to a dog? Do they react the same way as we do? So what they're going to do is hopefully find out if dogs use what they call a human-like principle or a human-like strategy to perceive, understand, and respond to human emotion.
Well, how have you found it works with your dog, Debbie?
Well, as you know, Susan, I love my little toy poodle, Sergio, with all my heart. We spend a lot of time together. He follows me around. He sits next to me a lot. And I really feel that he and I have quite an understanding and that we can feel each other's emotions. I took him to the vet recently, for example, and his little face said it all.
Oh.
I don't want to be going there. I know what's going to happen. And then when, you know, he wants to play with me with his favorite ball, his, you know, eyes light up just like a human, and he gets a smile on his face. So I have a feeling that dogs and humans may have more in common than they think, and that's not a big surprise considering that canines were domesticated sometime, scientists think, between 18,000 and 30,000 years ago. So we started to bond with our dogs a long time ago.
Well, thank you, Deborah, and give Sergio a little hug for me.
Oh, I will. He'll love it.
Okay. Bye-bye, Deborah.
Bye-bye.
This is VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
They were country music's power couple, Miranda Lambert and Blake Shelton. Their divorce took everyone by surprise. Soon after the announcement, Blake Shelton bonded with his colleague on the TV show The Voice and fellow recent divorcee, pop star Gwen Stefani. While the love lives of all three have been fodder for the tabloids, now the public will hear from the artists themselves through their medium of choice, music. Nikki Strong of VOA Music joins International Edition Sarah Williams to break it all down.
Okay, Nikki, so let's start with Gwen Stefani. She's got a new CD out.
Yes, she has a new CD. It's called This Is What the Truth Feels Like, and it is indeed about her boyfriend, Blake Shelton, and her divorce from Gavin Rossdale and everything that she's been through. So she shares that when she first presented the list of songs to her label, they were like, these are too personal, too intense. So in response, she rebelled and said, you know what, now I'm going to make it even that much more intense and personal. And she has. The songs are very catchy, and when it comes to Blake, we find out that she really sees him as saving her and that she is definitely in love. Some of the lyrics for the song, for example, Where Would I Be? It says, I was drifting out, then you pulled me in. Where would I be, boy, if you didn't love me, boy? I can't resist. You have the perfect kiss. But she goes on to sing about how he's rare, he's a sapphire, and she really sings his praises. She's obviously in love.
Well, now Blake Shelton is also releasing new music, correct?
Yeah, now he just released a single called Come Here to Forget, which tells the story of two people bonding while trying to forget their exes. So he didn't write the song, but the parallels are undeniable. And it really is the perfect setup for his forthcoming album, which he says will also be very personal and will most likely include songs about Gwen Stefani and, of course, his ex-wife, Miranda Lambert.
Well, now, Miranda Lambert, she's releasing music as well.
Yes, she's working on stuff. We have nothing yet about whether she's going to release something this year, but she is like the odd woman out. So when the announcement came that they were divorced, she was really reeling from that divorce. She really felt her pain based on the various things she said. And in the interim, Blake was developing this relationship with Gwen Stefani. And so rumors were flying in the tabloids. And then the night of the American Country Association Awards, where Miranda was nominated for, they make the official announcement that they're a couple, which, of course, made a lot of country fans feel a certain kind of way. Because it was like, you know, dude, could you wait till afterwards?
Yeah.
But now that she has a new romance blooming with an artist, Anderson East, she's now inspired and she's writing music and she's talking a little bit about her process. So we anticipate that she will release her version of events and her life pre and post divorce. If not this year, hopefully sometime early next year.
Very fruitful material there. Well, Gwen Stefani's new CD is called This Is What the Truth Feels Like. You can hear music from Gwen Stefani, Blake Shelton, and Miranda Lambert on VOA 1. You can also reach Nikki Strong on social media at @VOA_music and on Facebook at simply VOA Music. Thanks, Nikki.
Thank you.
Where'd you go? I got so used to being around you, boy. I'm trying not to care, but where'd you go? I'm doing my best to be sensible. I'm trying not to care, but you like drugs to me. I'm so into you totally. You like drugs to me, drugs to me. So
thanks for joining us for International Edition.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is committed to promoting religious freedom around the world, including in South Asia. Ambassador at Large for Religious Freedom David Saperstein said that while there have been positive developments from both governments and civil society in South Asia, serious challenges remain. In Pakistan, the government has made significant efforts under its National Action Plan to combat sectarianism and violent extremism. However, violence against religious minorities at the hands of extremists continues. In addition, blasphemy laws are still on the books and convictions still occur, with over 20 people currently sentenced to death or serving life sentences for blasphemy convictions. The United States opposes blasphemy laws, apostasy laws, and punishment of conversion laws everywhere. Such legislation is too frequently used to oppress those whose religious beliefs differ from the majority. In India, faith communities are mobilizing to challenge violent extremism. At the same time, India has seen its share of communal violence. One non-governmental organization reported that there was an attack on a Christian almost every day in 2015 in India. Sri Lanka is in the process of drafting a new constitution and is one of the few situations where there has been notable change in a positive direction, said Ambassador Saperstein. January brought the arrest of the leader of Bodu Balasena, a violent group that victimized Sri Lanka's religious minorities. In Nepal, ethnic and religious tensions remain, and the constitution includes a provision against conversions. In Bangladesh, extremists have targeted secular bloggers, brutally murdering them. The U.S. is also concerned about an increase in violence against religious minorities and their places of worship by militants claiming affiliation with ISIL. No nation, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry has said, can fulfill its potential if its people are denied the right to practice, to hold, to modify, to openly profess their innermost beliefs.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.